to make Snapchat a more attractive place to more creators, particularly smaller ones who are more reliant on brand deals, it really needed to roll out better ways for brands and creators to work together. And in the end, this can really be a sort of triple win situation.
Hey gang, it's Monday, November 6th. Jasmine and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by our principal analyst who covers everything social media based in California, it's Jasmine Emberg.
Hey Marcus, hey everyone.
Hello, hello. Today's fact. Okay, normally I do a Finnish fact for Jasmine.
It's not a Finland fact again?
I ran out. Sorry, the list I had only had like 10, and so I'm flat out of Finnish facts.
I wish the listeners could see my face right now.
Yeah, she's thrilled. with that. I'm sorry. Please don't walk away. Thank you. Come back. So I do have one for you, though. How high can a bird fly? Ever thought about this, Jasmine?
I have not, actually.
I hadn't either. And then I was stunned that I hadn't thought about this at least once in my life.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin to guess.
They can't reach space. So okay. That's their that's their ceiling. Yeah, I know, shocker. That's their ceiling. But they can really get up there. And so the bird that can fly the highest, the Rupel's griffin vulture, which is a large African vulture with an 8-foot wingspan. And it can fly up, sounds like a pterodactyl. It's not actually that big when it's walking around, but when it, wingspan, it can, it's quite big. So it can fly up to 37,000 feet high.
Which that's like an airplane.
Exactly. Anyone who's been on a plane, when they announce how high they are, that's cruising altitude for a commercial flight. It's typically between like 33 and like 39, 40. So yeah, you could see one of these just like probably not flying past the window. You'd probably overtake it because they're not that fast.
Where in the world do you find these vultures?
I don't know. Not in the sky. I don't know. You don't hear about planes constantly coming into contact with them. I do wonder though if they're up there and this, like, the whole time they're just screaming. Because that's high, even for a bird. You think they're up there just being like, ah, whilst they're flying.
I don't
around.
Know, but next time I'm on an airplane, you know I'm going to be looking through the window if I can see one. Just with my face plastered against it.
Like, is this your first time flying? You're like, no, I'm looking for something. I'm bird watching. Put the blockers away, miss, we're landing. today's real topic, Snapchat as users, but not enough money. How come? So in today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover Snap. Then for another news, we'll discuss the difference between the term influencer and creator and LinkedIn hitting a user milestone. But we start, of course, with the lead. Jasmine, we're talking about Snapchat, or Snap, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with their premium subscription. Over 5 million people now pay for Snapchat's premium subscription. Snapchat Plus costs $3.99 a month. We'll round up to four. What does this 5 million user milestone tell us or you about Snapchat Plus?
I mean, it's a major milestone for Snap and obviously for Snapchat Plus. And we've seen, you know, over the past couple of months that figure has continued to grow. I think this 5 million one was released in September. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it means that Snap has figured out a good value exchange for its users. They are willing to pay for new features that Snapchat Plus provides. One of the reasons, though, or the biggest reason that Snapchat released Snapchat Plus was in order to diversify its revenue streams. And that's where Snapchat Plus isn't really making a huge impact. So with 5 million users and at about $3.99 a month, that's still under $250 million in revenue per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hoping that number obviously can continue growing. They have added 2 million new folks since April. So it is continuing mm-hmm. to grow. Only a year old, Jasmine. That kind of was hard for me to believe, but they launched it last summer. So just over a year old for Snapchat Plus. When you zoom out and look at all of their users, Snapchat broke the 400 million daily active user mark for the first time, reaching 406 in the quarter in Q3. It added 9 million new users to do so. Jasmine, what was your biggest takeaway from Snapchat breaking the 400 million user mark and adding 9 million in the quarter to get past that milestone?
I feel like every time we talk about Snap earnings, it's always the same story about users.
Similar,
they're
yes.
Similar. Yeah, they're always, you know, pretty much always able to bring in new users. And I think that's just a testament to, you know, the stickiness of the service and how much people enjoy being on it. I do want to point out, though, that recently and in the most recent quarter, most of that growth has come from the rest of the world and not in the US. And I think that that's important to remember because rest of the world monetizes at a lower rate. But if you think about, I don't know if you saw the goals, the internal goals that were leaked from Snap that were set by CEO Evan Spiegel for 2024. Mm-hmm. And if they're already at the 400 million daily user mark, I mean, that makes that one of those very lofty goals, which was 475 million users in 2024, much more achievable. So still good news.
Okay. Yeah, good news. Yeah, it's a great point, though. They are leaning on markets outside of North America for that user growth because North America has been stuck at 100 million users pretty much for the last year, 101 to 100 pretty much. And during that time, the last year, Europe's added 7 million daily active users, new ones. The rest of the world's added nearly 40 million and now accounts for over half of Snapchat's total users, rest of world. 3 years ago, it was a third of its total. And to your point, monetizing at a lower rate, it's a lot lower. North America, about $8 per user in North America, and it's compared to just $1 per user for rest of world and only $2 per user Europe. Moving over to them making money, Jasmine, Snapchat's revenue grew 5% to nearly make $1.2 billion in the quarter. But what should we make of Snap's 5% year-on-year growth in total revenue in Q3?
I have been waiting all year to say this, but Snap has snapped back.
Well played. Don't hate it. Don't hate it.
Terrible, terrible pun. I know, but bad. I love a terrible pun.
We'll probably cut it out.
Please don't, Victoria. No, I mean, it's definitely good news, right? And it's especially good news to a lot of investors and observers and other people who are, you know, interested in the business because people have been wondering whether Snap has what it takes to turn its business around. And Snap has clearly benefited from the overall rebound within the digital ad market. It's also made some serious improvements to its ad platform and that's seen pretty strong uptake. Snap did warn that there are going to be challenges ahead in Q4 in particular because of disruption due to the Israel-Hamas war. We're already seeing that some brand advertisers have paused some of their spending, not just on Snapchat, but on social media overall, and that could impact its Q4 ad revenues. But I do think it's important to remember that after several quarters of struggles, it seems like Snap is on a much better path than it was before.
Yeah, on the positive side of things, glass half full, it hasn't seen positive quarterly growth in over a year when it was at 6% last Q3. So that's good, seeing positive growth again. Second point, North America, which accounts for 2/3 of revenue, improved, but it did improve to -3 from negative double digits each of the last three quarters. So it has improved, but it's still in the red at -3. And as we mentioned before, it's kind of leaning on those markets outside of North America in terms of growth. Europe grew 24% up from 5 that it grew last Q3. So well played for Europe. Rest of world hit 30%. That's roughly where it's lived for the past 2 years per quarter. But as we mentioned, it doesn't monetize the same outside of North America. So not ideal. On the glass half empty side of things, average revenue per user down 6% year on year in the quarter. And then second point here, the company remaining unprofitable, posting a net loss of nearly 400 million, 370 to be exact in Q3, a slightly worse than last year. So still not able to get themselves into black on the profitability side of things. Jasmine, let's end the lead by talking about their AR ambitions. Just last month, Snap laid off another 170 employees in its year-old AR, augmented reality, enterprise division, so it could focus on AI and other services, it says. What does this say about Snapchat's AR ambitions?
I think it was a really tough pill for Snap to swallow. You know, AR has been the focal point for Snap for a very long time now. And I saw the technology in Aries and it was really cool. It was just ahead of its time in many ways. I mean, people are not shopping with AR to the extent that they would need to be able to license this out to enough brands and retailers. And now as we're seeing the attention shift to AI, it's a less compelling service for investors and for companies that they would want to sell it to.
Mm-hmm. So they say they're going to focus on AI more. Over 200 million people apparently have used Snap's personalized AI chatbot, My AI, correct? Mm-hmm. To collectively send over 20 billion messages since Snap debuted it in April. Jasmine, let's end the lead by talking about some of their branded content tools that they just put out. Any takes on those?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, it's about time. Snap, you know, Snapchat has a really strong, loyal, engaged Gen Z user base. And they also have a lot of creators who have started turning to the platform more and more because of the ad revenue sharing program that it has in Stories. To make Snapchat a more attractive place to more creators, particularly smaller ones who are more reliant on brand deals, it really needed to roll out better ways for brands and creators to work together. Mm-hmm. And in the end, this can really be a sort of triple win situation for platforms, for brands, and for creators, because it's going to help bring in more engagement, potentially more revenue, ad revenue for Snapchat. It's going to help onboard more brands onto the platform and onboard more creators who are going to, you know, use it more frequently and bring their audiences with them.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on this creator collab campaigns initiative that Snapchat's just released. That's it for the lead though. Time for the halftime report. Jasmine, what to you is the most interesting thing we've talked about in the first half?
Well, I think the thing that I would repeat, you know, is just that Snap is on a much better path now than it was a quarter ago, 2 quarters ago. And if it can continue this momentum, it could end the year in a much better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're projecting that they're going to reach 410 to 412 million daily active users in Q4. That would mean that they would add about 4 to 6 million in the quarter. That'd be about half of or less than what they added last Q4. So not projecting a great Q4 in terms of users. In terms of revenue, they're expecting revenue growth of 2 to 6%. Last Q4 was zero. So anything above zero would be promising, or an improvement at least. We expect, if you zoom out, get rid of the quarters, look at it full picture for the whole year, we expect Snapchat's ad revenue to fall 10% in 2023 as a whole, after negative year-on-year growth in both Q1 and Q2, down 7% in Q1. It was down 4% in Q2 and has since got its head above water to 5% in Q3. We'll see what Q4 holds, but we expect Snapchat's revenue growth to fall 10% in the US for the full year, but then bounce back up to 9% in 2024. The company still accounts for less than 1% of digital ad spending in America, which I think is also important to note. That's all we've got time for the first half. We move to the second today in other news. Why do people hate the term influencer? And LinkedIn just reached 1 billion members. So what? Story one, why do people hate the term influencer? Questions Emmy Lederman of Adweek. Former Facebook employee Sarah Wilson, now the founder of digital strategy consultancy SW Projects, says that she worked with influencers, but now influencer is a dirty word because it described somebody who was using their looks to create a brand. So now we call them creators, kind of. Maverick co-founder and CEO Lyle Stevens says there is still a gray area that causes confusion across the space. But Jasmine, what's your take on the terms influencer versus creator?
Well, first of all, I don't think the term influencer should be a dirty word. I think influencers have gotten a bad rap over the years because of many of the scandals that have taken place within the industry. And if you think back a few years ago, people were still describing it as a Wild West, and that is certainly not the case anymore. It is a profession. It is a career path. I do prefer the term creator, however, to influencer, and I'm a strong advocate for, you know, talking about creator marketing over influencer marketing, because it encompasses a much broader range of people. Creators are of all different industries, all different types, and they're doing many different things and monetizing in many different ways. And I think it just paints a more holistic picture of what's really going on in the landscape.
Yeah, it's a really great article from Ms. Lederman, I wanted to point out a few things. One, people prefer the term creator, at least according to his 2021 mm-hmm. Maverick survey. 57% of folks said they used the title creator or content creator versus 23%, so less than half, who chose influencer. Others said ambassador, blogger, photographer, streamer, things like that. But number one was creator. The second point here, whatever you call it, it's authenticity that matters. Maya Pohl, who focuses on disability awareness, advocacy, and beauty content, saying, quote, "When I started accepting sponsorships, I feared I would lose the legitimacy and value behind what I was saying," close mm-hmm. quote. So that still holds true regardless of what you call the job. And then number three, the gender pay gap also lives here. No surprises, I'm sure. Unfortunately, female influencers accounted for 77% of all transaction volume in 2022, but men make 1.2 times more per paid post, according to a 2023 report from marketing tech company Izia.
Can't escape it. It's everywhere.
Yes. Yes.
But I do think it's the really fascinating debate, right? And, you know, there's other times I've seen the word influencer used when people are describing a creator who is monetizing their content through brand sponsorships in particular, because they're influencing people to buy mm-hmm. something. Mm-hmm. So there isn't really this standardized definition. I think it would be really helpful for the creator economy at large if we could come up with a standardized definition of what is an influencer, what is a creator, and decide what term we want to use to describe people.
That
the problem
help.
Again is that creator is a huge umbrella term for mm-hmm. so many different types of, well, quote unquote, creators that it's really impossible to define.
Yeah, that's a great point. Story two, Jasmine, you flagged this story to me. LinkedIn just reached 1 billion members. You were pointing to Stephen Nellis of Reuters, who wrote this up, saying that LinkedIn's also adding more AI features for users paying the $40 a month for their premium tier. Those features can tell a user whether they're a good candidate based on the information in their profile, can also recommend profile changes. But Jasmine, what should we make of this 1 billion user milestone for LinkedIn?
Well, it's a huge milestone again. Also, interestingly, it's coming just a few days after Elon Musk said that LinkedIn was one of X's biggest competitors now that they're rolling out X hiring, which I have a lot of questions about. however, I mean, I've definitely seen a surge in engagement on LinkedIn, you know, over the past year or so. It really has been able to not only avoid some of the struggles that other social platforms have had and really pick up new users from the turmoil at X in particular. And it's become a hub for news. It's also, you know, morphing from being solely a professional network to having people socialize still in a sort of, you know, professional way. And it's also, you know, rising in terms of bringing in B2B and B2B influencers in particular. So it really is growing and much more beyond its roots as being a professional network where people can search for jobs, for example.
Mm-hmm. That's all we've got time for this episode. Jasmine, thank you so much as always for hanging out today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, and Sophie, who does our social media. Thanks to everyone for listening in. You can hit subscribe or follow, and also the bell icon to turn on notifications for new content if you so choose. We'll hopefully see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast.